What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. As always, I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun, and I'm excited to be here with you today. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And as always, make sure that if you're one of those people that listens in your car, or if you just don't like digging through clunky podcast apps, that you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. You say those words, and it'll bring up the latest episode. A much more convenient way to listen to all of your favorite Locked On shows. Locked On NFL, really lit over there this time of year, and Locked On Draft, which is about to get real fun, especially for the next few weeks. So today we're going to talk about what happened yesterday, which is that the league year turned over, and a lot of different things come of all of that. We have a few odds and ends of Viking news to talk about, and then, at least as I'm recording this, there's a lot of offensive linemen on the market. A lot of guys that are still, in my opinion, viable options. I know a lot of people got really hung up on some of the bigger names, you know, like Roger Saffold and Matt Paradis and these guys that we kind of identified as, like, the big fish in free agency, but there's still a lot of guys out there, and I wanted to go through some of the names that are left, especially at offensive line, which is where the Vikings, I think, most glaring need is. I think everybody can agree with that, and just go through some of the names and what their story is and what the deal is with all of that. But first, let's go over the biggest news that I haven't talked about yet, which is that exclusive rights free agent Cedric Lang, as well as Josiah Price, will not have any tenders offered to them at this time. They will hit the free agency market. We're going to spend the whole show talking about what that means for the franchise. No, I'm just kidding. However, I do want to mention every single piece of Vikings news on this show, and that is Vikings news. Those are two guys that tried out in training camp, didn't make it. They both got hurt in training camp and therefore spent the whole year on IR. That's something that is part of the kind of the CBA that a team is going to do you right if that happens to you. But neither of those guys were going to really make the team anyways. So they go on to see if they can't get into a new training camp somewhere. Josiah Price has actually tried out for the Vikings a couple times. Cedric Lang, if you recall, he was a guard. He was like mostly a basketball player until like his junior year of college, and then he moved to guard. Moved to football entirely, like, very new, but he was this crazy athlete, so maybe they could mold him, and he was one of those, like, random training camp guys. I am going to talk about every single one of those people on this show when it comes to the summer, so get used to talk about guys you probably haven't heard of, because I'm going to make sure you've heard of them. But going on to the real actual news that I'm sure you guys all want to hear about, the structure of Anthony Barr's contract is available to us. Ben Gessling was on it first, but everybody has reported it. And it is unbelievably team-friendly. It's also relatively Anthony Barr-friendly because he got a nice signing bonus. He got a $13 million signing bonus, and he gets $5.6 million in this year. And he has a lot of it wrapped up in guarantees, but the way that it scales is really nice for the Vikings salary cap. So hats off to Rob Brzezinski, who is in charge of making those decisions and making them really well most of the time. He's unbelievable at this. But he made it so that the 2019 cap hit for Anthony Barr is only $5.6 million, and that changes the math of everything. If you remember all the mock off seasons I did, I was penciling in $11.5 million, which is what I thought the average per year would be, and it turned out to be a little bit more than that. But the point is, making it so that contract only counts $5.6 million against the cap in this, the year that is probably the hardest to figure out. Like, that was the hardest contract to figure out, probably. And Rob Brzezinski knocked it out of the park. He definitely deserves commendation for that. It's all really a testament to the culture and just like the locker room and how much everybody wants to be in Minnesota. You know, the Wilfs and Spielman and Zimmer and, you know, guys like Everson Griffin and back to like Brian Robeson. These guys really built a culture that people want to be a part of. Even Sheldon Richardson, you know, Cleveland was able to outbid the Vikings by a significant margin, but Sheldon Richardson wanted to come back, and Anthony Barr was willing to take a pretty poorly structured deal on his end to do so. I think that speaks volumes about just how much of a destination Minnesota is, and that's a really nice thing that's going to continue to pay off. Some other quick notes about the turnover of the new league year. You know, before in all of the podcasts, at least when I was recording, we were in the legal tampering period, the 48-hour period before free agency officially starts, where teams get to negotiate and they can basically get 99% of a deal hashed out. They just can't sign on the dotted line. It allows for players to do stuff like what Barr did and teams if they want to, but by and large, free agency started a couple days ago. But now that the league year has officially moved over, it actually means a couple things. One of those things is that Trey Waynes' fifth-year option money is guaranteed. So he will make that money in 2019. That does not mean that he's guaranteed to be a Viking. There are some rumors about the Vikings receiving calls for Trey Waynes, and it makes sense. It's a fairly shallow cornerback market in free agency, and the draft cornerbacks are pretty thin as well. So if you're a team like the Chiefs or the Steelers that kind of have like questionable secondaries and there's not a lot of options, I think there could be a pretty good market to like get your money's worth out of Trey Waynes. And remember, we've talked about trades and kind of that philosophy before, but trades are not a punitive thing. It's not getting rid of Trey Waynes. I think Trey Waynes is a really good player. It's a matter of getting more back than what he's worth. And we can argue about what he's worth, but the point of the trade is you have to seem like you have to view it as you're getting more back, and then you're just selling at a profit. That doesn't mean that you didn't like the thing. It just means they liked it more. However, what happens with the trade doesn't change the fact that Trey Waynes' money is going to be guaranteed, and everybody else kind of flips over to their new contract. The Barr contract is official. The Vikings announced it. It's all a big thing. All of the other contracts that we've talked about have now become official. They've signed on the dotted line, and it removes most of the possibility for Anthony Barr-style shenanigans to happen, really, to anybody else. There's still a lot of names out there, and I am going to talk with you about all of them. But first, I am going to step away to a quick ad break, and when I come back, let's talk about some of the guys that are still around. See y'all in a minute. Okay, welcome back, everybody. So continuing with some of the updates of the news before we get into the actual meat of the episode, which is guys that are still available. Just an update on the Everson Griffin situation and where the Vikings are at right now. I'm sure that they are going to be targeting some of the guards specifically. It seems like they're specifically targeting a guard. They haven't really shown much interest in the market of centers and tackles. There's been a few sprinkled here and there, but it's been like largely the most effort they've been trying to put in to negotiating has been with like the higher profile guards. So we're going to look at some of those. But what they're waiting for is Everson Griffin. And we talked about this yesterday, but there has been no movement since the last time I recorded a podcast. Everson Griffin is still basically mulling over a restructure offer that the Vikings gave him. They basically said, accept this contract or we're going to cut you and let you hit free agency. So he is mulling that over. He has until Friday when his contract actually becomes fully guaranteed to do that. The Vikings would cut him before that like fully kicks in. So he essentially has until then to decide. So elsewhere in former Viking news, Latavius Murray signed a deal with the Saints. This happened a couple days ago. I just didn't get a chance to talk about it with everything that was going on with Anthony Barr's crazy saga and Sheldon Richardson. And I wanted to talk about the acquisitions and re-signings the Vikings made before I talked about guys that were Vikings and where they went. But he signed for $4 million and change a year to the New Orleans Saints. That would give the Vikings a compensatory pick if Shamar Stephen weren't already canceling it out. Those two free agents now cancel, and now the compensatory pick status is that the Vikings are getting a third rounder for Sheldon Richardson. As the landscape of free agent signings continues to evolve, we'll continue to track that. A lot of that will depend on what happens with Everson Griffin, because if he restructures, that will free up a certain amount of space. If he gets cut, that frees up a little more, and that will kind of determine what happens with the Vikings guard acquisitions. But I kind of wanted to take a minute to step back, because a lot of the frenzy has passed. You know, Paradis is gone, Mitch Morse is gone, Roger Saffold is gone, and we're down to kind of that second tier. And this is where the Vikings tend to make a move every time. They usually go for these guys, not the big money guys that, well, honestly, they're going to be overpaid. They would rather get an efficient deal versus paying, you know, the hottest name on the market and probably overpaying them. They're always looking to make sure that their deals are efficient and that their contract work is efficient, and that's how they can cram so much talent onto the roster for so long. So the first guy I want to talk about is somebody that I think has gotten a little bit of buzz around Vikings Twitter. I know specifically Miles Gorham at Climbing the Pocket has talked about him, but I echo the thoughts as well as Steven Wisniewski. He played for Philadelphia last year. The Eagles did not pick up his option, so for whatever that's worth, that means he would count toward the compensatory pick formula for the Vikings and probably cancel out like Sheldon Richardson or whatever else, depending on the contract, of course. But he had been a very solid interior offensive lineman for like 6 or 7 years. And when I say solid, I think sometimes solid translates to average for people. I mean solid as in reliably good play. He wasn't Marshall Yanda or Matt Burke or anything like that, but he was reliably starting quality, and he was never going to be the problem on your roster, and I think that for the Vikings could make a huge difference. He had a down year in 2018, at least according to PFF grades and stats, but when you have 7 years at one level of play and then 1 year that dips, I think it's responsible to bet on a positive regression. That is to say, a bounce back year. Usually players, unless it's like an age cliff or something, which I don't think is happening to Wisniewski at exactly 30 years old. I think he'll probably have plenty of gas left in the tank, but he would make a nice option. And because he's coming off of a down year, you know, your most recent year tends to set your price, but it doesn't necessarily reflect your projection. And the Vikings have taken advantage of this before. They did this with Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers. They got guys who had solid careers up until the most recent year and then, you know, signed a guy based on the price tag that recent year gives them, expecting the regression to go positively. And I think that it worked out okay. I mean, Mike Remmers, they ruined him by moving him to guard, but he was a quality right tackle. Riley Reiff, I'm not a huge fan of at left tackle, but he has been a far cry from some of the design. I mean, he wasn't Matt Khalil, right? And it sounds like the Vikings are at least pleased enough with that to keep him on the roster for the time being. There's been a little bit of a whisper of moving him to guard. I think that represents their idea of like, listen, if the best tackle in the draft falls to us, we're not going to like pass him up because we have Riley Reiff. We'll move him to guard or figure something out. But I don't think that it's like a move of we don't think he can play tackle, so we'll move him to guard. You've heard my thoughts about position switching plenty in the past. Point is, I think Steven Wisniewski is a guy that the Vikings should target, and definitely somebody that fits what they're trying to do and fits a lot of their like free agent philosophies of the past. Absolutely a name to watch. Moving on elsewhere in the free agent market, a guy who I think will come at a discount because of his age and injury history, but I think betting against an injury history is often a pretty good bet, and that's something I actually want to talk about more in depth on a later episode, but I'm talking about TJ Lang. He went to Detroit, and he had a lot of injury problems there. He's going to be 32 in the upcoming season, so that's obviously another thing that's going to like deflate his value. But in the 282 snaps he did play in Detroit this season, he gave up all of 4 pressures, so he still definitely has it if you can get him on the field. I would love to bring him in conjunction with Nick Easton, who the Vikings are reported to still be very interested in re-signing. I think, you know, coming off of an injury and not being amazing before that, I don't think he's going to have too much of a market, so I don't think there's much of a reason for the Vikings to, like, rush that. I think they can afford to be patient. But if they do manage to bring, like, him and TJ Lang in, that, to me, would be a pretty good way to like hedge against each other's bets. If you think about like compounding probability, like think about the probability that Nick Easton is healthy and good and back to form, and then the probability that TJ Lang is healthy and good and back to form, and it's definitely not 100% for either guy. It's not 80% for either guy. For simplicity's sake, if you say they're both coin flips, they're both 50-50 chances, well, if you bring both of them in and have them compete with each other, then the chance that you get burned and both of them are too hurt to play is only 25%. You have a 75% chance of getting like a quality player out of that. So I think, you know, and the Vikings leverage that all the time. They'll always use compounding probabilities to kind of say, listen, if one of you doesn't work out, we're protected as long as the other guy works out. And the odds that both of you don't work out is a lot lower than all the other outcomes. So we're going to play those odds and take maybe a calculated risk, but it would still work out. And if TJ Lang is healthy, he would immediately be probably the best lineman on the team, to be honest. And at least according to PFF's grades, his pass blocking is better than his run blocking. And I know that the Vikings have been, you know, really intent on fixing their run game. But if you remember from the Rick Dennison episode that I did and all of the talk about the Kubiak and the zone scheme and stuff, the scheme is going to help them run block, and I don't think the scheme is going to help them pass block. So the Vikings should be prioritizing people who can naturally pass block well. And if they have problems run blocking, well, the scheme should kind of elevate their play a little bit. And if they're going to bank on one thing, it should be that the run blocking will be okay because of, you know, the coaching masterminds we brought in. Focus on making sure that the pass blocking is sound without the coaches having to do a lot about it. So I am going to step away to a quick ad break, but that's a couple guys, and when I come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other people on the market that I think are worth tracking as the next days go on. This is the last show that I get with you until after, you know, Griffin will have figured out his restructure thing and a lot of dominoes will have fallen. So probably by the next show, we'll have a lot of answers to recap. So I kind of want to send you into the weekend with some names to watch. So I will be back in a second. Okay, welcome back. So moving on to another guy that was released rather than just having a contract expire or not having an option picked up. So Wisniewski, you know, he would count toward the comp pick formula. TJ Lang would not. And neither would Josh Sitton, a guy who definitely still has a lot of quality experience behind him and a lot of quality tape and a lot of evidence to show us that he probably would be good in 2019. But similarly, he's coming off of an injury. Miami's cleaning house and they released him. He only ended up playing one game in Tennessee before falling to a shoulder injury, and then he was released halfway through his contract. But other than that one game season, he's been like an all-pro caliber guard. And yes, again, he'll be 33 in the upcoming season, but I think when you're trying to rebuild a unit like the Vikings are rebuilding their offensive line, I think you have to get the short-term answer to kind of tide you over until you can find the long-term answer in the draft. And I think if the Vikings don't get a guy like Sitton or TJ Lang, then, you know, then the rookie has to start. And you have to get a rookie. Like, if Quinnen Williams, for whatever crazy reason, falls to number 18, in any other scenario, any team would be out of their mind to pass on him. But if you have such a horrible need at guard that you have to take a guard over a guy like Quinnen Williams or some, you know, something crazy like Kyler Murray falls, like, you know, you want to be able to pull the trigger on some of those weird, crazy scenarios, and getting a guy like Sitton, even though he's not a long-term solution, he would be a heck of a short-term solution. He gave up a total of 18 pressures over his two seasons in Chicago. That is absolutely wild. For comparison, that really bad Riley Reiff game where he was playing on a bum foot against the Bills, he gave up 13 in that game. That is almost the amount that Josh Sitton gave up in 2 years in Chicago. And then he got hurt at his next destination, and now he's going to be really cheap, and he's old. So it's, again, it's not a good long-term option. But if you want a free agent that's going to be able to come in, plug and play, and be well, presuming that he's healthy, and I don't know the deal about that. He did have to get shoulder surgery, so there is a little bit of risk there. But we did just kind of address the idea of risk and age and stuff. It would be an option that I think Vikings fans would really like if he gets on the field for the 2019 season. There has been a little bit of talk about Quentin Spain. He played for Tennessee. He's the guy that Roger Saffold comes in and replaces. The rumor has it that the Vikings evaluated him and are not interested, which I think that's good, right? Like, even though he's a guy that people have enjoyed at guard, if he doesn't fit what the Vikings are going to do, like, we should still have standards here. We shouldn't just go out and get whoever the biggest name is. We should still, like, be doing our own evaluations and make sure that we're getting somebody that we like. So I'm not going to talk too much about Quentin Spain because I know the Vikings aren't interested, so it's not really a realistic option. Another name that I've heard thrown around is John Miller. He's coming from Buffalo. He is really boomer bust, I guess, especially if you look at his, like, game-by-game Pro Football Focus grades. He had pass-blocking grades in the 40s in four different games, and the rest of them are, like, high 70s, low 80s. That's a really high variance player, and that might not be what the Vikings want, right? Like, we had that already in Tom Compton. If we wanted a high variance player that has games where he'll have a clean sheet, you know, three clean sheets in a row, and then he'll give up six pressures in the next game, that's essentially what we'd be getting. So personally, I'm not very interested, but I do think he's like Tom Compton with higher highs, and the highs are a little bit more frequent than the lows. So I think he's a starting caliber guard, And I think he would have to, like, compete with a guy like Compton or Easton. He wouldn't be anointed to start. And I think that tells you exactly how exciting that move would be. But it might be the thing the Vikings do if they're still trying to, you know, be frugal at the position. I've seen some people suggesting DJ Fluker. He's coming out of Seattle. He was a terrible run blocker in 2018 for Seattle. But he was a serviceable pass blocker at worst and a good one at best. And that run blocking thing, at least looking at the PFF grades, might have been an anomaly. He was a lot better at run blocking in previous seasons, and if the Vikings truly do their homework, they might see beyond, oh, he had a down year, you know, sometimes a guy's just playing through injury or something else is going on, you don't really know. Weirdly, that might be like the only player who played his best football under Tom Cable and then got worse when Tom Cable left, so I don't know what that tells you, and I definitely don't know if that's good. But I think those guys, the last couple guys that I mentioned, those would be the second tier disappointing options, in my opinion. Those are guys that are like flawed and like maybe should be starting, but probably won't be good. I'd be much more interested in a guy like TJ Lang or Josh Sitton that has risk, but like if that risk doesn't manifest itself, they'll be good players. And I think that's how you have to handle this situation. Like, you know, I've talked a lot about how, like, oh, don't freak out about the offensive line and the guard position and stuff. It's you know, not something that they're going to go get the biggest guy. But that doesn't mean that they should cheap out and go for, like, DJ Fluker or, like, Mike Iupati or whatever's left of him. That's somebody that they were interested in the first time he hit free agency, and he's definitely on the decline. That's, like, not an option I really want any part of. And I think, you know, the classic thought of if they get a cheap guy, it's, you know, you're going to get what you pay for. Like, that really represents itself in a guy like, you know, Fluker or Iupati or whatever, versus a guy like Josh Sitton or a guy like Steven Wisniewski, who are going to probably come at that same cheap price, but have a lot higher projection. Like, you can project them a lot higher safely, and you have to accept some risk, but I'd rather accept risk with acceptable reward rather than taking no risk, but the like you're guaranteed to get something that's not good enough. And I don't really think that is an acceptable solution to the Vikings guard problem. And remember, whatever they get, they're going to draft somebody as well. So you kind of have, like, you'd have Josh Sitton, and then if Josh Sitton can't go, instead of, oh crap, we don't have a guard, it's, oh crap, the rookie has to start a little sooner than we wanted him to. And that's a much lower punishment for, you know, taking the risk. Like, that mitigates the risk very heavily because the punishment for it just isn't that bad. So real quick before I sign off, a couple of hashtag old friend updates. I think it's fun to keep up with this stuff, even though it doesn't have too much of an impact on the Vikings. Teddy Bridgewater is in a really fun situation right now with the Dolphins and Saints kind of fighting over him. I'm watching that, having a lot of fun seeing how that plays out. It'll be really interesting to find out what happens in the 49ers backfield. They just picked up Tevin Coleman, and they have Jerick McKinnon coming off that ACL, so that probably means that they're just not confident about a guy coming off the injury. And at running back, why would you be? But it's really an interesting situation, to say the least. And if I'm the Vikings, I would definitely keep an eye out, because if Jerick McKinnon does get released to save cap space, or just because it's a redundancy or something, coming off of an injury, he'd probably be a really cheap option that knows, like, what you want to do, knows a lot of the players there, and, you know, would assimilate very quickly. I don't think that would happen, and I've said a lot that really any running back works, so I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to hang my hat on it, but it would be fun. You know, I always like seeing guys return to the team, especially when they were guys that I thought had a really good tenure here, but probably a pipe dream. And with that, I am going to wrap up this episode of Locked On Vikings. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with this whole hectic, crazy week. It has been a wild ride. There's a lot left to sort itself out, and when I come back for next Monday's show, I will be there to sift through all the noise and the craziness and break down what all this stuff means and where it leaves the Vikings headed into the draft. And then it's draft season, baby. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBronNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. You can always ask your smart device, play podcast Locked On Vikings. It'll take you to the most recent episode. Thank you all so much for hanging out once more, and as always, Skull.